Today was the Levaya, the funeral of Chaim Kanievsky. I thought I'd speak a little bit about him and try to bring us into his world a little bit. Obviously, that's almost an impossibility, but a little bit. I felt a strong kesher, a strong connection to him. Around 20 years ago, I heard totally out of nowhere that you could just write a letter to him, and he'll write you back. So that started my addiction to writing letters to Chaim Kanievsky on Motzei Shabbos and getting it back on Thursday, and that went on for a while. And it helped me a tremendous amount, gave me a tremendous amount of chizuk throughout the years that I'd get these letters from him. It had a big influence on my family also. He's always discussed the letters at our Shabbos table. So I wanted to just try to bring ourselves a little bit into what he created and what he was about. So I figured best way to do that is to start a little bit with his Sfarim that he wrote. Mm-hmm. And maybe over the course of this week, I'll have other opportunities to discuss more. But first, we'd start with the first Sefer that he published. It was called the Nachal Eisan. Many of us maybe don't even know what that is, which is part of his whole Chap. As we'll discuss, but this is the first sefer that he wrote. It came out in three steps. It's all the laws of the Egla Rufa. What is that? It's an obscure halacha that obviously is not relevant to us today. And it's about if a city, someone is found murdered in that city, so the elders of that city have to go ahead and take an Egla Rufa, take this animal into the Nachal Eisan, this area outside of the city. And there was a service that they would go ahead and do with this Egla Rufa. Okay? So he wrote all the laws that have to do with this Egla Rufa. Why he did that, we'll get there in a moment. But first, let's just appreciate the historical aspect of the book. So he wrote it before he got married. I guess he was in his teens, very early 20s maybe. And it came out of three steps. The first Mahadura, the first version, came out with just the halachos, and he gave it to his uncle, the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish was the greatest Torah giant of the last generation, and he went ahead and he gave it to the Chazon Ish to read it over. He read over the whole thing. Then he added on a little more. He gave that second version to the Chazon Ish as well. The Chazon Ish added some of his notes into it. Imagine he's writing his notes into his nephew's his book. Then the third one had a lot more added in. And that is the version that we have today that's published, you can buy it in the stores, with all of the different ins and outs that he discusses over here. Now, just to appreciate all of it, every aspect of the Torah is put into this book. We'll get there in a moment. Anything that you thought was anything related, he got in here. To the extent that Reb Chaim Kanievsky writes that originally he wanted to write an introduction to the book, that if anyone is able to find an area about the topic, Egla Rufa, that he missed, he'll give him a free copy. But then he was nervous that too many people would add in, would send in, you know, points, extra points or points that he missed. So he pulled it out of the introduction that he wouldn't give out the free copies. He didn't know if he could afford to give out free copies to everyone. But he said that till this day, no one ever sent anything to him that he missed. But when it came out, he went to a very big Talmud Chacham, and he said, can you think of a topic that is related to the Egla Rufa that maybe I might have missed? So the Talmud Chacham right away said as follows, what would happen if the animal would have two heads? And part of the service is you take off the heads. He said, what if it would have two heads? Which head would you take off? So the Talmud Chacham knew that that's so obscure and impossible that there's no way he wrote about it. So on the spot, I said, oh, I got that. In Simon Hay, I have a whole topic about that. What would happen if the animal has two heads? Okay. Around 7 years ago, Reb Chaim Kanievsky put out another version of the book, and he added three things that he thought he missed. One of them was, what would happen if someone created a human being through the Sefer Yetzirah? I mean, he wasn't born through a mother and a father. He was created through this metaphysical, supernatural way called the Sefer Yetzirah. And that person would end up getting murdered. Would you still have to bring Egla Rufa? And he discusses that as one of the things that he missed from the book. Okay, so he took every single possibility of this obscure topic that is not related, nothing to do with us anymore, and he put it all into here. One of those topics that he discusses is the bracha. You have to make a bracha. These elders had to make a bracha when they performed a service. So what would be the nusach, what would be the text of the bracha? Some mitzvahs that we have, asher kedushatam mitzvahsav, al mitzvah tzitzit. We use the word al. But if you wear a talis, right, lihi tatef b'tzitzit. Sometimes you say the word al, and sometimes you say lit. So when do you say lit, and when do you say al? So in Simon Hay, he writes that there are 10 opinions about this, and he goes through all of the different opinions. He wrote this massive piece when he was 14 years old. When he was 14 years old, this part of the Nachal Esan was written, and he put it in there. Okay, now why did he write this? And this is already now bring us into his world. So in the Hakdam, in the introduction, he gives two reasons why he wrote this book. Reason number one, he quotes from the Sefer Chassidim. He says, the Sefer Chassidim writes, a person should love a mitzvah that is like a meis mitzvah. A meis mitzvah is unfortunately someone who passes away and doesn't have any relatives and no one even knows who he is and who's going to bury the person, who's going to take care of him. So a meis mitzvah, anyone is allowed, should run and go ahead and take care of this deceased because there's no relatives, no support system. You're supposed to go ahead and do it. So the Sefer Chassidim writes that sometimes there are mitzvahs like that that no one even pays attention to. She'en lecha oskim, no one does it. Kagoshitira mitzvah bezuya. People are degrading the mitzvah. O Torah she'en la oskim. Or there's an area of the Torah that no one learns. Kagoshitira she'bnei ircha lom de moed v'seidun Hashem. Like maybe you'll see that the people in your city, they learn about the holidays. They learn about Seidun Hashem, which is what we learn in yeshivas. But save the kachim. But all the laws of the Beis HaMikdash, etc. Who's learning those things? It's not relevant nowadays. Umesachas moed katan, or people don't learn about avelas, about mourning. V'tekavash akol kinega kulam. Kihem dugmas meis mitzvah. That's like a meis mitzvah, and you should run to do it. You should go learn the areas of the Torah that people are neglecting, people aren't learning it. And therefore, he said that no one even knows maybe what an egla roof is. It's a pasuk in the Torah, but no one knows what this Nachal Esan is. So therefore, he's going to devote time to writing it. Now, he didn't just, you know, put out an ad. There's something called Egla Rufa and Nachal Esan. He wrote every single possible halacha that might come out and explain it in tremendous depths. Took him a long time to go ahead and write this thing. It's an unbelievable thing. And that was a theme in many, many, many of the things that Rechaim Knievsky wrote. So for example, there's something called the Yafe Einayim, something that we benefit from. It gives sources on Nashim and the Zikin of different things where that the Gemara came from, earlier sources. So on Zrayim, on the laws of agricultural laws, and Taros, purity laws, and the end of Kachim related to Korbanos, there is no Yafe Einayim, because, again, we're not relevant to us right now. So he went out, he wrote a sefer called the Tashlum Yafe Einayim, to write sources for every single statement that Chazal makes in those obscure areas. Or, for example, he wrote a sefer called Mare Makom. What's the Mare Makom? Every place that Rashi and Tosfos quote a Chazal, but don't tell you where it is, in all of Shas, he tells you where it is. He has a kunchus, he fills in the blanks for all the places that Rashi and Tosfos didn't let us know. Or there's a sefer called the Karnei Chagavim, all the laws of grasshoppers. Today it was spoken about at the funeral, a famous story about the grasshoppers, and that while he was writing the sefer Karnei Chagavim about grasshoppers, he needed to know what a grasshopper looked like. And a grasshopper popped right onto his windowsill. And he was able to stare at the grasshopper as long as needed until he was finished writing, and then the grasshopper went away. I remember I once said this over my wife actually said that over. She was teaching in a seminary. She said it over to a bunch of girls, and the girls got all excited. Ah! Okay, why were they excited about the story? Because the day before that, they were in Bnei Brak for their Bnei Brak Shabbaton, and Rebbetzin Kanievsky told them the story that there was a grasshopper that came onto her husband's windowsill until he was finished writing the Sefer Karnei Chagavim. There was an a proscript to the story, and that was that he was once with a professor, who knew the anatomy of animals. He was a professor in the university. And he met up with Chaim Knesset, and he said, you know, you got it wrong. The way you wrote it about the grasshopper is not correct. So Chaim Knesset felt very, very bad that, you know, he wrote a sefer about grasshoppers and there was a mistake in there. At that moment, the grasshopper came there, right in between them. They were able to pick it up and look at it, and Chaim Knesset was right. And I said this story once on Shavuos night in the World Center, where it was open and people came, and I said over the story about the power of Torah, that you see the people who hit levels of Torah, Hashem helps them out with their learning. And I said over the story, that's his professor, and a guy came over to me, not from Mishnah Torah at all, a random person, and he said, my uncle was the professor in Bar Ilan that this story happened to. And he said that the whole family knows that the story, that he tried to tell Chaim Knesset that he was wrong about the anatomy of the grasshopper, and the grasshopper had popped in again to show him that he was right. Okay, but then he wrote another sefer called Ksovas Kaka, which is about tattoos, and then he wrote the sefer called the Shekel HaKodesh, which is absolutely amazing. That's for another shmooze. Hopefully we'll have time this week. It's a mind-boggling book, all about the Rambam's Kiddush HaKodesh, sanctifying of the new moon, and shkalim, all the lachas of the donations of the shkalim that had to be in the Beis HaMikdash. Why did he pick these two things? So the reason is because those two things were the only ones that there's no Mishnah Berurah on in the Rambam Zmanim, meaning in the Rambam's laws of Zmanim, you have Sukkah and the laws of fast days and Pesach and Shabbos, everything's in there. But those two, there's no Mishnah Berurah on. So therefore, he wrote, it looks exactly like a Mishnah Berurah. I have a copy downstairs if anyone wants to see it. It looks exactly like a Mishnah Berurah. And he wrote it on those topics. Again, these topics that other people aren't learning and weren't touched on by other people. Then, of course, his sefer, Derech Emunah, also looks like a Mishnah Berurah. It's all on the Rambam's rhyme, all the laws of Shemitah and giving taking off Truma and Meiser, the whole thing. He wrote because people weren't learning it. There wasn't anything that totally took all of the halachas and put it in a way together. That was the Derech Emunah. Then he started the Derech Chachma. The Derech Chachma is the same thing. So it looks like Mishnah Berurah, but it's on the Rambam Hilchos Kachim. So it talks about the Beis HaMikdash, etc. He was not able to finish that. And then there's also the seven Masechtos Ketanos, which many of us don't even know exists. But there's a Masechta called Avadim, and there's a Masechta called Mezuzah. And he wrote on all those because he felt no one wrote a proper explanation on it. So again, he went for the underdog, we'll call it. All of these areas of the Torah that people had not paid attention to, he went ahead and he spent his life, he spent years researching and learning it and writing it as if it was the most important thing right here and then. And that's one of the reasons that he wrote the sefer called Nachal Esan. But then there's another reason that he gives. And this is very relevant to us, I think. He says, Ube'emes chutz mikol anal. Forget about that other reason, that it's a mitzvah to take care of the parts of Torah that no one else is learning. He says, but there's another more basic explanation. And he says, Kol divrei Torah kshurin ze bezeh. There's no such thing as, we understand the subjects, right? You know, there's economics, and then there's history, and then there's science. They have absolutely nothing to do with one another, right? They're separate subjects. In the Torah, it's not like that. The Torah is one entity, and everything is dependent on each other, and there's nothing that you could learn in one area that's not relevant to other areas. And therefore, yes, it might be that in this Nachal Esan, the laws are not nogea, they're not relevant for us today, but many of the laws that come out through that are relevant to areas that we need to know halacha l'maisa, that are relevant to us today. The entire Torah is one entity, and therefore you have to learn every area of Torah so that you can understand every area of Torah in the best way. But if there's an area that you're missing, so then you're missing in the other area as well, and therefore he says that he had to write the sefer for that reason. And someone once asked him, he said, you know, how did you get Kol HaTorah Kulin, every one of your svarim, every one of your sefer, you see that every theoretical possible explanation of scenario, etc., is all in there. He like put it all in. How do you do that? He said, what do you mean? All the Torah is one. It's not that something called Nachal Esan. I'm going to be an expert in this subject. It's related to so many other areas of the Torah, and therefore he extrapolated from all areas and put it all in here. This insight he highlighted in one of my favorite Divrei Torah from Rechaim Kanievsky, and that is as follows. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos In the Perek Hey, it says, Hafachba, Vahafachba, Dekulaba. A person should turn and turn and flip over within the Torah because it's all there. What does that mean? So the Ruach Chaim, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, has a commentary on Pirkei Avos called the Ruach Chaim. And in the Ruach Chaim, he says as follows, a statement which, if Rastin would have been reading it, I just would have read right past it. He says, let me give you an example. He says, from learning the laws of Sukkah, you could be matir and aguna. You could have a woman who wants to remarry. She's married to someone and you want to get her unstrangled, right? You want to get her out of her husband. If you learn Hilchos Sukkah, you'll be able to do it. Okay, that's in my mind, that was like, you know, it's like a joke type of thing. Like, obviously not. By learning, you know, the laws of how to build a sukkah, how are you going to help a woman who's married to a man? That's obviously not. Okay, but you know, it's giving an example. Like, everything's related to one another. But he didn't really mean that, right? No. But by Reb Chaim Kanievsky, every word was precious. Reb Chaim Volozhiner said that by learning the laws of sukkah, you can help a woman who's attached to a man to be married to another man. It must mean it. So he said, that's easy. The Gemara says in Baba Basra, on Kuf Samach Beis and Beis, 162b, the Gemara says that there's a type of a get, a document that releases a woman from her husband, called a get makusher. It's a folded, sewed type of a get. Okay, so on the law, on the bottom of every document, you have to have kosher signatures, right? So the uniqueness of this type of a get is that on every fold, that's going to fold it over, on every fold you have to have signatures on that fold. So you have to have your two regular witnesses, and then on every fold you have to have another two witnesses. Okay. So the Gemara says, but on these extra folds, you could have relatives sign. You just need two people, but they could be relatives. Now everyone knows relatives aren't valid witnesses. But for this, you're allowed. So the Gemara says, and don't scratch your head and say, huh, how does that help to fill in the blanks with invalid witnesses? Again, if they don't sign anything, the get is no good, and she's still married to this guy. If witnesses that aren't valid, meaning your brother and your father, they start filling in the blanks, then all of a sudden this get is good. And don't scratch your head on that one, because we find such a thing. Where do we find such a thing? By a sukkah. If you have a sukkah, so you have to have schach on the roof, right? And it has to be full. If you have three tfach of empty space, so the schach is no good. It's invalid. But if you fill up that empty space with non-kosher schach, then it's good. Meaning, if you leave it empty, too big, it's no good. But if you fill it in with invalid schach, then it is good. So you see from here that sometimes something, if it's empty, it's no good. But if it's filled even with invalid placements, then it is good. He said, and the Gemara says that's what it means. Even though these are invalid witnesses, you're filling the blanks with these invalid witnesses, is going to be good. And that's what he said. You see, Reb Chaim Kanievsky said that is the pshat in the Ruach Chaim on Pirkei Avos. Meaning, even if you're learning a Sechah Sukkah, you could be going ahead and helping some woman get out of her husband that she doesn't want to be married to. Unbelievable thing. The entire Torah is related to one another. And anything we ever learn, we have to try to put it in our bank, right, of our Torah knowledge, based on every single thing else that we learned. And we'll put it in. It's never, okay, I'm just doing this topic, and now I'm doing that topic, okay, I got this topic, and it's all one Indian, it's all one topic. And we have to keep on building and questioning and understanding and getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And this is who Reb Chaim Kanievsky was. He knew the whole thing. The whole thing. And he brought all of his knowledge into every little thing that he did. When he explained psukim in a sefer Time of the Kra, he'll say, why is there no vav in this pasuk? He'd bring all of his Torah knowledge to go ahead and explain why the Torah doesn't have a vav over there. Everything. That's how we looked at everything, with all that Torah knowledge into every little area that he did. And that's the second reason that he gave this Nachal Eson. Hopefully over the course of the week, we'll try to find a forum where we can discuss some more of the other books, just to try to appreciate this. But it's incredible. I highly recommend that we should take some time to learn from his farm to see what this is. But what the loss is of someone that really knew everything cold, and was able to explain it and teach it tons and tons of people, even when we realize, benefited from all of his Sfarim that he wrote. His father once told him, a Stipe Gaon once told him, he was offered many different positions to be Rosh Yeshivas and heads of kolels and things like that. He said, your job is just to write. You just stay and write. Don't get bothered by these other different positions. You just write. When he was looking for his pen, he used to say, where's my kli umnus? Where's my utensil that I use for my work? And when he'd go to write a book, he would say, I'm going to work now. And that's how he viewed writing his Sfarim as his tafkid. And of course, he took time every single day to answer questions for people like Rassman. Anyone. He would even say that he was able to tell that kids were writing sometimes the letters because they were so pathetic, the questions, that it had to be from a kid. So they asked him, so why are you wasting your time on answering these letters? He said, obviously the reason the person asked me the question was that after they could have a letter from Reb Chaim Kanievsky. And that would give them chizuk, and it'll give them, you know, the strength to learn more. And he said, that's my opportunity to go ahead and strengthen other people. And even though it was at the expense maybe of writing, finishing the Derech Chachma, because he didn't have as much time, the sefer that I told you he wrote about on Kutchim, but he thought this was a very, very important part of his life, and he said at one point that maybe this is the only reason I'm still alive, because I'm writing these letters back to people and answering all their questions. And he really cared about every person and every person's ability to learn the Torah and master the Torah, and he had it. And that's one of the tremendous losses that we've just experienced. We should try to tap in to appreciate what that means, what that is, to have the entire Torah at your fingertips and to be able to put it all together into one big picture and to have the clarity. Bez Hashem will be able to get to levels, the high levels in the Torah, just like he would have wanted from us, and we could benefit from everything that he already put into this world. Shavua Tov.